It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Homeported here in Kodiak, Alaska on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Looks a little rainy outside. That's what they're calling for, too. 45 degrees right now. The rain could be heavy at times. Looks like this is one of those times. We're looking for a high near 48 today with east wind to 25 miles per hour. Rain tonight as well, low around 43 tonight. South wind to 15, could gust as high as 25. And Mariners, we do have a storm warning today for the Shelikof, northeast wind 50 knots, seas to 14 feet right now. Coming up on the Midday Report, it was the last day of Alaska's regular legislative session yesterday. It was a busy day. One Alaska state representative had a one-word reply to the announcement that all three new icebreakers will be ported in Seattle instead of Alaska. And more Alaskans are raising backyard chickens. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. New movement today toward a possible ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, where attacks and counterattacks have been spiraling for the last week and a half. The Israeli Security Cabinet has voted to accept an Egyptian initiative for a unilateral ceasefire, but have not agreed on a time to start. Egypt still has to persuade Gaza's Hamas to get on board. Earlier today, the president of Egypt spoke with President Biden. More on that from NPR's Asma Khalid.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Egypt has an important role to play in influencing Hamas, and she's reiterating that the White House's approach has been to work behind the scenes and push for quiet and intensive diplomacy.
Our view is we believe the Israelis have achieved significant military objectives.
And she added,
we feel they are in a position to start winding their operation down. We continue to believe that they have a right to defend themselves.
Biden has been encouraging a ceasefire, but fighting has continued. Asma Khalid, NPR News, the White House.
Declaring the first significant break in the nation's battle against hate and violence, President Biden signed the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act into law.
Thank you.
At a White House signing ceremony today, Biden addressed acts of hate against the Asian American community since the coronavirus was first reported in China.
Every time we're silent, every time we let hate flourish, we make a lie of who we are as a nation.
Vice President Kamala Harris, the first African-American and South Asian to hold the office, says the law will expedite the Justice Department's review of every type of hate crime and expand efforts on state and local levels to report such crimes. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is moving ahead with legislation that would create an independent commission to further investigate the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports the bill passed with bipartisan support in the House this week, but is facing pushback from some congressional Republicans.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says there's no good justification for opposing the bipartisan commission. Speaking on the Senate floor, Schumer took aim at his Republican colleagues, including Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who have come out against the bill.
The real reason it seems Republican leaders are suddenly opposed to this bipartisan commission is they don't want to talk about the big lie at all. They don't even want to investigate how former President Trump instigated an attack on our democracy because he was angry about losing the 2020 election.
The commission would have an equal number of members, and any subpoena issued would need approval from both the chair and vice chair of the panel, a major concession by Democrats. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Yesterday was the last day of Alaska's regular legislative session, and it was a busy one. but lawmakers still have work to do on the state budget. Alaska Permanent Fund dividends could be as high as $2,300, the level adopted by the Senate in an amendment. Palmer Republican Senator Shelley Hughes voted for the amendment. She says dividends benefit every Alaskan, and she wants dividends added to the state constitution, ensuring they're paid before other state expenses.
Then we could settle this once and for all, and then we will know where we stand, and we will know what we will need in order to pay for government once we take the first call for the PFD.
But a $2,300 dividend would require drawing $1.5 billion more than planned from the Permanent Fund's earnings reserve. Bethel Senator Lyman Hoffman voted no on the amendment, as well as on another amendment that would have paid dividends of more than $3,000. He says he supports larger dividends, but paying them when the budget isn't balanced will put off resolving the issue.
So today, I'm a big supporter of the dividend. I'm a big supporter of trying to resolve the problem, and I'm sick and tired of kicking the can down the road.
The Senate finished its work less than 1 minute before the deadline in the state constitution for the session to end. A special session was scheduled to start today. Governor Mike Dunleavy has put two items on the agenda for the session: finishing work on the budget and consideration of a constitutional amendment that would enshrine the PFD in the Constitution. Lawmakers have been deeply divided for 6 years about how to pay for dividends and how high the PFDs should be. Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Wilichowski says the budget problem is due to low oil taxes. He described the state government's message to industry.
Go ahead, take the resources, don't have to compensate us, pay the lowest taxes in the world, and instead we're going to take it from the people. And that is unfair. The people need to understand that. They need to know. They need to know that this is a tax on them.
But Anchorage Republican Natasha von Imhoff says it doesn't make sense to tax one group of Alaskans to pay for larger dividends.
I cannot be the senator that taxes hardworking Alaskans and takes money from their paycheck only to deposit it in the personal checking account of their neighbor.
Since the House and the Senate didn't agree on each other's versions of the budget, there will be a committee with three members from each chamber that will work out the differences between the two chambers during the special session. In addition to work on the budget, lawmakers ended the session with a flurry of other activity. 15 more bills will head to Governor Mike Dunleavy's desk for him to sign or veto. They include House Bill 22, a bill that allows people to share ownership of a dairy-producing animal and pay for another owner for raw milk or other dairy products made from raw milk. It would remain illegal to sell raw milk to those who don't share ownership. Another bill would expand the rights of people who live in assisted living homes to include internet access, as well as to meals consistent with their cultural preferences. Work on bills that only passed one chamber will resume during the next regular session in January. When Alaska State Representative Jonathan Kreese Tompkins from Sitka read that the Coast Guard was going to send three new icebreakers to port in Seattle instead of Alaska, he had one word.
Baloney?
In a meeting of the House's Military and Veterans Affairs Committee on Tuesday, Kreese Tompkins introduced a resolution co-sponsored by several other legislators, including Kodiak Representative and current Speaker of the House Louise Stutes, calling on the federal government to redirect those icebreakers to Alaska ports.
Some of those should end up in Alaska, given we're the only Arctic state in the Union, and I'm tired of Seattle basically claiming assets that rightfully belong to Alaska. I mean, it's sort of patronizing to the state.
Kreese Tompkins cited the Alaska Fisheries Science Center in Seattle and the research vessel Fairweather, homeported in Oregon, as examples of Alaska being overlooked as viable locations for military and scientific programs. Committee members acknowledged Base Kodiak as the largest Coast Guard base in the world and with the potential to homeport an icebreaker.
And especially in recognition of the notable Coast Guard assets already in the state, the potential of the Nome port being further developed with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers investment. And this resolution is very timely.
The resolution does not have the authority to place icebreakers at Alaska or Kodiak ports, but it could support the advocacy efforts of Alaska's federal congressional delegation, who will be speaking with state legislators at the end of the month about these icebreakers. The resolution passed the House unanimously on a late Wednesday vote and is headed to the governor's desk for his signature. More and more Alaskans are raising backyard chickens. Just ask John Dyer, a poultry farmer based in Palmer. He lost a lot of restaurant business when the pandemic hit, but he's making up for that with a boom in backyard chicken sales. Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon has this story.
Don Dyer is at an Anchorage feed store and surrounded by cardboard boxes full of tiny, fluffy, chirping chicks.
One copper, one Rhode Island bread.
He's talking with customer Rachel Varela and reading off her order.
The white on their heads are your barred rocks.
Varela is 28 years old. She lives in Anchorage, and she's about to be the owner of 5 2-day-old chicks.
We both grew up with chickens, and we just decided that now, recently bought a house, have the space for them, built a coop for them, and are ready to go.
Varela is among the growing number of Alaskans raising their own chicken flocks in their yards. Dyer, the farmer at Polaris Poultry, says he's seen a big surge in demand for chicks over the past year, especially last summer.
Demand was incredible, and there were so many people who were off work and wanted projects, and their children weren't in school, so they wanted pets for their children.
That's right, pets.
Chickens are an enjoyable animal. They're very trainable, and we have a chicken at my house right now that if we leave the front door open, she walks right in the front door and goes right into the living room and looks for a place to lay an egg.
At the peak of business, usually in April and May, Dyer estimates he sells roughly 2,000 to 3,000 chicks a week. And while many stay in Anchorage and Mat-Su, he's also sending them all over the state. They go to the Aleutians, Port Hyden, to Glen Allen in the interior.
Ukiavik, we sent a lot to Dillingham, to Ambler. We just sent a load out to King Salmon.
And that's actually not the chick's first plane ride. Dyer flies all of the chicks up from a hatchery in Oregon to start with because there are no big hatcheries in the state. He started shipping up more chicks for backyard flocks just over a year ago after the pandemic crushed a big part of his original business, supplying chicken meat for restaurants.
And all of a sudden restaurants shut down. And so we invested heavily in baby chicks, and the bet turned out good.
Dyer expects demand to remain steady this summer after last year's big spike. He's also found a niche selling newborn turkeys.
That is a baby turkey sound.
Throughout the morning, customers like Varela continue to show up to pick up their orders of baby birds, mostly chicks. Some plan to use them for meat, some for eggs. 38-year-old Brandy Crowley is raising chickens for both. She's a first-time chicken owner. She picked up 15 chicks last week from Dyer. Her kids love them.
Oh my gosh, my 5-year-old, she's in there every day, and she sits in the cage. She doesn't care what mess is around. She just sits in the cage with them. So she's really excited about them, and my son is too.
Today, Crowley is picking up turkeys to add to her flock. She says she has a new descriptor for herself too.
I'm a chicken mom. I'm just excited about it. I've seen a lot of people that have done it and they have relationships with these birds. I think it's fun.
And as a new owner of baby chicks or chicken mom myself, I have to agree. In Anchorage, I'm Tegan Hanlon.
After months of planning, the Shunack tribe will be hosting its Aleutic Festival along Near Island's North Shore Trail this Saturday. According to Alyssa Madrid, cultural program coordinator for the Shunack tribe, the festival will be held outdoors due to the pandemic.
So we decided to have an outdoor festival this time around. And with that, we are going to have a culture walk. And this will be at the Near Island North End Trail, that main trail as soon as you cross the bridge over on the left. The culture walk will basically have 8 different booths along the trail. All the booths will be focusing on like different aspects of our grant services as well as Aleutic culture. So we will have a chamai table to welcome everyone with gifts and just checking into the event as well. We will have a resources table with Aleutic language resources, books, and different ways you can like get involved.
An Aleutic cultural celebration would, of course, be incomplete without the Aleutic language. In addition to the language learning material, there will be a language game alongside other traditional Aleutic games.
We'll have a language game station as well, and there will be a couple different games that one will be focusing on. It's like a memory game, and it will be focusing on language. And then we also have our traditional games at that same table, Ukchuk, and those are traditional Aleutic games, and they'll be a little bit modified for the different age groups that will be welcomed at our event.
Ultimately, for Madrid, the Aleutic Festival represents more than just a public display of culture. It's a display of cultural values as well.
Community is really important to the Aleutic people, and having fun, you know, highlighting joy and games and humor is really what is, sorry, yeah, have like joy and having fun and humor are just some of many aspects of what it means to the Aleutic culture. So that's really what this event is about, is just having fun. And, you know, we're coming out of this dark age of COVID. And I think having an event like this outside with community is really, it's just really showing how resilient our people are and that we can and will have a great time no matter the circumstances. And we want to welcome everyone to that, you know. Again, it's about community. We want the Kodiak community to come and celebrate with us.
Those interested can attend the Shunack Tribes Aleutic Festival May 22nd. That's this coming Saturday. From 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on Near Island's North End Trail. No registration is required. The event is free and open to the public. Again, that's 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, Near Island's North End Trail. The State Department of Health and Social Services has taken down its website and halted many online services in response to a cyber attack on the agency's computer network. It's the third reported case of hackers gaining access to a state-operated network over the past 6 months. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
DHSS officials shut down the website and online services offered by 17 sub-agencies soon after they discovered the malware attack Monday night. A news release issued Tuesday says department officials took those actions to, quote, prevent further disruption of its network and harm to its servers, systems, and databases. That's made it challenging for workers at those agencies, which offer a wide range of services that include vital records, case management for needy families, and youth offender data management. An employee at one of those sub-agencies, who didn't want to be identified, says workers spent much of Tuesday printing out documents and taking other measures to back up records. Another agency employee said Wednesday that her office was still doing business, albeit slowly.
I'm still able to do everything that I need to get done, just a little slower. Like I can walk away and come back and go, okay, it's finally loaded.
Emily Dove is an assistant at the Delta Junction Public Health Office.
But other than that, we're able to do business as usual.
Dove says the website to make COVID-19 vaccine appointments still functions. The DHSS news release says that's one of the online services still available on a website that's not hosted by the agency. The appointment site and the department's COVID data dashboards can still be accessed through covid19.alaska.gov. The news release advises members of the public to call agencies whose online services have been shut down. It says the website and online services will remain unavailable until investigators can find out more about the attack and rid the network of the malware. A DHSS spokesperson said in an email Wednesday that the department's working with several organizations, including federal law enforcement and a cybersecurity company. He declined to respond to other questions about the investigation. The DHSS hack is the third reported recent cyber attack on state websites. The Alaska court system shut down much of its site last month after a malware attack, and the homepage was still offline as of Wednesday. Late last year, hackers stole the personal information of more than 100,000 Alaskans in an attack on the State Division of Elections online voter registration system. The DHSS news release says investigators are trying to determine whether hackers have accessed any personal or confidential information in this most recent attack. It says department officials are notifying people who've been directly affected by the hack, as well as companies or organizations that work with the agency. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Updates on Alaska aquaculture. More after this.
This radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
More Alaskans are planning to become kelp growers based on applications filed during the window that runs from January through April.
7 applications. One of them is for oysters only, and the rest of them are all kelp.
Flip Pryor is statewide aquaculture section chief at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, which issues the permits. They partner with the Department of Natural Resources, which leases the lands where aquatic farming takes place. 4 of the new kelp-growing applicants are from Kodiak, one each from Yakutat and Cordova, and the sole oyster applicant is from Sitka. Combined, they hope to farm just under 240 acres of wetlands. The 7 applicants reversed a steady upward trend, likely due to a wait-and-see approach due to the pandemic. Michelle Morris is permit coordinator.
We had applicants whose personal situations changed because of COVID. They became homeschooling parents, things like that, where they could no longer dedicate the time that they thought they were going to have out on a farm site.
In 2020, the number of aquatic permits increased by 5 for 70 farms and nurseries and 5 hatcheries. Sales of primarily ribbon and sugar kelp doubled, topping 230,000 pounds, while oyster production dropped below 1 million for the first time since 2016. Preliminary data show total sales by 29 farmers at $1.09 million, with oysters making up 80% of the value. Most aquatic farms are located in central and southeast regions, but interest has spread to the Alaska Peninsula and further west. Flip Pryor says small growers fill an important niche, but it will take bigger operators to scale up the industry's economic potential. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 20th day of May, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:37. It won't set again until 10:38 p.m., giving us 17 hours and 2 minutes of daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 45 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 69, set in 1993. Our record low was 30, set in 1985. And it is currently 45 degrees here in beautiful downtown Kodiak with what they're calling a rain fog mist. We get a lot of that. This rain is expected to continue today, maybe slack off a little bit tonight, but we're looking at new accumulations of between half and three quarters of an inch today. East wind at 25 miles per hour. And for tonight, we're looking at southeast winds gusting as high as 25. Tomorrow, showers are likely mainly before 2. Cloudy skies after that with a high near 48 tomorrow. East wind to 15 could gust as high as 20. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 3:25 p.m. That will be a 0.7-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:19 this evening. That's going to be 6.6 feet. Our next low tide will be at 4:08 a.m. and be 2.7 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 9:59, 10 a.m., and be 6.5 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 4:04 p.m. That will be a 2.1-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 10:42 p.m. and be 11.9 feet. Your low tide for the early morning hours will be at 4:55 a.m. and be 3.9 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 10:45 a.m. and be 11.2 feet. Mariners, here's your weather synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A complex 997 millibar low, 250 nautical miles south of Kodiak City, will move Thursday night to 200 nautical miles east of Kodiak City and go to 1,011 millibars on Friday night. As a result, here on the east side, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory through Friday. East wind to 30 knots right now, seas to 12 feet. For tomorrow, look for southeast wind to 20 knots, seas to 10 feet. Over in the Shelikof, though, we're looking for a storm warning today. Northeast wind to 50 knots right now in the Shelikof, seas building up to 14 feet. For tonight, look for east wind to 35 knots, turning to the southeast, coming down to 15 knots after midnight. Seas to 13 feet, should subside to 3 feet after midnight with rain. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, look for northeast wind to 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays. Chiniac Bay, small craft advisory today, east wind to 25 knots right now and seas to 7 feet. For tomorrow, southeast 25, strike that, southeast 15 knots, seas to 4 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, small craft advisory through tonight, east wind to 30 knots right now in Marmot Bay, seas to 12 feet. For tomorrow, east wind to 15 knots, seas coming down to 4 feet. Senior citizens of Kodiak's Board of Directors, we have their monthly board meeting on Friday. That's happening 1 p.m. Senior Center's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public. For more information, call the Senior Center at 486-6181. The Historic Preservation Commission will hold a meeting on Friday. That's happening at 12 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. This meeting is open to the public and will be web streamed as well. For the meeting link, as well as agendas and meeting packets, go to the City of Kodiak website. And if you want more information or more materials, call the clerk's office at 486-8636, or you can call the Kodiak Historical Society at 486-5920. AMC and Alaska Sea Grant are conducting a fishing vessel drill conductor class in Kodiak. The next one will be Thursday, May 27th. That's happening at 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and the 28th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And that's over at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center on Near Island. This class meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. To register, all you have to do is go to www.amsea.org. That's AMSEA.org. You can also give them a call at 747-3287. That's 907-747-3287. Also, if you're going to be in Dillingham, they will be conducting the same classes in Dillingham on June 12th and June 13th. And if you will be in Naknek, they will be conducting those classes on June 10th and June 11th. And again, if you need to register, just go to amsea.org, www.amsea.org. The 2021 Crab Fest Tennis Tournament will start 6 p.m. at the Baranoff Park Tennis Courts on May 22nd through June 2nd or 3rd. So the tournament starts this coming Saturday and runs through the June 2nd or 3rd. There will be, depending upon interest, men's and women's singles and doubles divisions and mixed doubles. Awards will be presented for first, second, and third place in each division. Match location will depend on weather. Weekday matches will start at 6 p.m. and run through about 10 p.m. Weekend matches will start at 12 noon or earlier, depending on players and their schedules, and could run through 10 p.m. as well. For more information, contact Steve Johnston at 907-654-7014. That's 654-7014. And they'd like you to register by Tuesday the 25th at 5 p.m. Things going on at the public library. Reading colors your world. Join the Kodiak Public Library Saturday, May 22nd at 11 to 3 to kick off the library's summer reading program. Sign up for the 2021 Summer Reading Program for a summer of exploration, learning, and fun. All ages are welcome to participate in person or online, and you can earn prizes. The library is excited to bring back Beanstack, an online program to log your reading, earn prizes, and join library activities this summer. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. Also, the Kodiak Public Library is hosting a community beekeeping project this summer. Check out the many books on everything bee-related in the library, and you can watch a live hive check every Tuesday at 11 a.m. on the library's YouTube channel. Call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper to watch in person, or you can watch from inside. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. And finally, the Kodiak Arts Council and Frame Shop invite Kodiak artists to submit new original creative work to be included in the 21st Annual Crab Festival Art Show. The show will accept and feature artwork by Kodiak artists completed within the past 3 years. Eligible media include just about everything: drawing, block ink prints, pottery, sculpture, photography, metalwork, woodwork, fiber and textile artwork. The deadline to register is tomorrow, so you need to go to the Kodiak Arts Council website at kodiakarts.org or at the Frame Shop's website at theframeshopak.com.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Support for KMXT comes from GCI. Since 2017, the GCI Suicide Prevention Fund has given nearly $500,000 to Alaska organizations and nonprofits in an effort to help prevent suicide and promote healthy communities. More information about suicide prevention resources and initiatives can be found at gci.com/gives.